Welcome to Webcology. Webcology is the show that takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Our guides will take you on a journey into web marketing and bring you the experts and the information so that you can further explore the web marketing world. Now, here are the hosts of Webcology, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome to Webcology on WMR.fm. It's Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing and Weights and Measure. I'm sorry, Weights and Mean, Dave, I'm so sorry. It's a somber day. We're not really going to be talking a lot about the search world as we normally would because nothing in the world really matters today. Anyone listening live will understand, this podcast was recorded live on the day that Russia invaded Ukraine. And we have joining us two members of the search community from Ukraine, both living in Kiev. Igor, I'm sorry if I get your name wrong, Igor. Igor Shulesko is a Russian-speaking Ukrainian living in Kiev. He's a brand ambassador for Serpstat, co-founder of RankUp, and co-owner of Eshemio.link. He has a friend translating for him. Anton Shulky is head of influencer marketing at Duda, the highly SEO-friendly CMS platform. Originally from Moscow, Anton lives in Kiev, Ukraine. Both of us join us live from Kiev. And Igor and Anton, welcome to Webcology. I wish you could be here under better circumstances. Starting with Anton, how are you guys doing?
Well, I really don't. Yeah, I've been asked this question today probably 200 times or 200 zillion times. I don't know what to say. Well, the good news, we haven't been bombed yet, but looks like the all good news ended up here.
Igor, how about where you are? Are you in a safe place?
Да, я в хорошем месте. Нас не бомбят. У нас пока тихо.
So yeah, he says we're in a safe place, we're not being bombed, and for now it's calm.
Earlier today, residents of Kharkiv, the second largest city in Ukraine, woke up to find that the internet wasn't there, had been cut off. According to Wired magazine, about half the city suffered an internet outage. How about in Kiev? Are you guys still able to communicate with the outside world? Are you still getting news coming in, and you're able to put news out?
Yeah, well, obviously we are here, and we are in Kiev, so internet works perfectly. No problem with internet so far.
Okay, how is it on the ground? Like, do you? We know that Russian troops are in Chernobyl and they're moving towards the capital. What expectations do you have?
I'm not military expert, so I'm not going to really pronounce on this kind of things. Unfortunately, I think Russia is much closer than Chernobyl. So, expectations... Well, it's all very confusing because different parts obviously claiming different achievements. So, as I said, I'm not military expert, not gonna, and we don't really have full information. But so far, it doesn't look very well if you talk about military part of all the things.
Igor, as an entrepreneur and a business person, somebody who's whose business stretches beyond the borders of Ukraine. What are you thinking about the coming days, weeks, months? How are you even thinking about, are you able to think about your business right now? Or businesses?
Влад, можешь мне помочь? Я немного не ловил суть.
Да, он спросил, как ты себя чувствуешь сейчас вот с этим обострением и как предпринимателю, который есть бизнес в разных странах, как ты себя чувствуешь и что ты вообще думаешь? Какие у тебя есть, может быть, проблемы?
Я проснулся сегодня в 6 утра, в 6:30 утра. Первое, что я начал делать, это выплачивать всем своим сотрудникам деньги.
So he woke up today at 6:30 a.m. in the morning and he started paying all of his employees all their salaries.
Мы заморозили все проекты, мы приостановили все проекты и написали всем клиентам, что мы фризимся до середины воскресенья.
Mm-hmm. So they froze all the projects and they also informed all of their clients that they will be they won't be working until next Sunday.
Ожидание, полет ожиданий до середины воскресенья. Пока далеко мы не смотрим, что будет. Надеемся на лучшее.
So we're not looking too far ahead. We're hoping for the best and we're thinking for now that we're looking at Sunday and then that's the day where we can give more news.
On your side, like it's a big ocean away. I know that despite what the intelligence was sort of saying, I was still surprised. Like I was still surprised that this happened, even though we were sort of warned. Was it the same there, or was this more expected? Were you as surprised as say I was when this happened?
I think we were in denial, like you were, because it was all omens were there. It was very, very clear. As I said, 10,000 times, I'm not a military expert, but it was clear. It's not just for going round and round. But still, we were in denial, and we couldn't really believe it could possibly happen. It never happened in my life. It was my first day in a war. But actually, talking about war, Ukraine has been in a war since 2014, and I never really thought about that because war was somewhere there, 100 kilometers away in Donbas. But people were in my today's position since 2014, and we got it today.
That's a really interesting sort of perspective on things. And when we're talking about those distances, that's actually very close. Like from where I guess I live, like can't. Well, no, Ukraine is a massive country too. So that's actually very close. And I didn't think of that. And that's very actually enlightening for me and for our audience to go, right, this has actually been going on. It just moved a little bit and is on a much broader scale now than it was before.
I want to tell about what's going on in our SEO chats in Telegram.
Yeah.
I will continue in Russian. У нас есть несколько Telegram-чатов, и там тысячи людей сидят.
Можешь продолжать всю мысль, я тебя перебью.
У нас есть несколько Telegram-чатов, и там сидят несколько тысяч людей. И сегодня веб-мастера очень сильно поделились. Есть веб-мастера, которые с России и которые поддерживают агрессию. И для нас, как для украинцев, как для ребят, которые занимаются в одной нише, это было действительно большим шоком.
So, we have a few Telegram groups in our SEO community in Eastern Europe. We have a few thousand people. One of them is about 4,000 or 5,000 members. And today, during the attacks, the communities, the admins of the communities split into two camps. There were a few people that were pro-Russian aggression. And for us, as Ukrainians, it's a big shock because we work with these people for many years back to back. So this is a very decisive moment and a big shock for us.
Нам пришлось приостановить работу всех телеграм-чатов, и они сейчас заморожены, чтобы не раздувалась эта агрессия. Очень много зашло ботов, которые начали писать о том, что Украина сдается, что уже города украинские взяты, и поэтому, чтобы не было разжигание всего этого, мы приостановили все работы в Telegram-чатах.
We have frozen all the Telegram chats because we've had we were running into an issue that a lot of people were coming in and it was getting quite aggressive. Also, we suspect we had a lot of Russian bots which would come in and they would spread just false propaganda, fake news, saying that Ukrainian soldiers are giving up, the cities are conquered and stuff like this. So we put a stop to it to not instill any more fear into people.
You bring up an interesting, well, interesting, I guess, a valid or relevant part of this discussion. Over here, we hear about the pro-Russian support in certain regions. What's it like in Kyiv? Like, I know sort of some of the regions and are stronger than others. What is the support and how strong is it? How is that balance playing out?
Влад, ответь, ты больше в теме.
Игорь asked me to reply. So just as a little bit background information, I'm a Belgian citizen living in Ukraine. I'm also native Ukrainian Russian. So I'm giving interview. I gave like 10 interviews for the Belgian media today. The thing is, Ukraine is indeed very, it's very, very big and vast and different. Some people are very pro-Ukrainian and Ukrainian speaking. Some people are pro-Russia, Russian speaking. Now, in Kyiv, Kyiv is obviously the capital. Do we have people supporting Russia and the Russian world? Yes, we do. Do we like them? Do we accept them? No, we don't. Do they have the freedom to do so? Yes, they do. Now, all of the community, as I see now, are very, very, very much worried about what's happening. And we're all against Russian aggression. Whatever we have, we're all against Russian aggression, and we're all resisting and trying to stay put, trying to inform each other and help each other in any way possible.
This must be incredibly painful for people with friends, family, business relations, just the stuff of life that crosses the border. The nearest analog I can think of as a Canadian would be the United States invading Canada. We have an incredible trade relationship. We have very similar cultures. We have cross-border businesses, marriages, friendships, and families. And this must be ripping people apart. And it's a terribly, terribly sad thing. I think of some of the great businesses in the search world that are based in Russia, based in Kyiv, based in North America. Do you guys see a path moving forward past this? Like, it's such a very painful place to be. But we, I'm not even sure how to phrase the question. But there's just so many cross border relationships between Russia and Ukraine. Is this repairable?
It is difficult. Yeah, it is difficult. We got to a point when we don't want to be liberated. I'm using inverted Nazi, but I'm using inverted commas. Yeah, we don't. I'm a Russian speaker as well, and I grew up in Moscow, but I don't want to be liberated here by Russian troops. And probably most of the people don't want to be liberated. But of course, I don't have any stat on it. So I used to work for Semrush, and Semrush is originally a Russian company with still very big office in St. Petersburg. I got a lot of people came to me privately and saying that they don't support war and we're still friends and everything. It's what I hear today.
How do you feel about that, man?
And me?
How do you feel about that, Igor, with, again, so many cross-border relationships and friendships? How do you move forward?
Игорь, он говорит, ну, с таким, как бы, у тебя микрофон выключен, с такими отношениями, как есть у России и Украины, как мы вообще будем двигаться дальше в будущем с тем, что сейчас все произошло?
Нет мыслей. Я на данный момент не думаю об этом. Я на данный момент... ситуация развивается стремительно. Моя мама живет в прифронтовой зоне, Там подбили 15 танков рядом с ее домом. Это город Шостка рядом с Конотопом. А моя тетя живет в Мариуполе. Рядом с домами, куда бабахнуло и развалило несколько домов. И я про отношения сейчас, как у нас будет, я не думаю. И, наверное, подумаю только об этом завтра или послезавтра. И я не знаю, когда я буду об этом думать. У меня нет мыслей.
So he says he's not really thinking about any relation, possible relationships right now, because the situation is escalating really, really very rapidly. His mom lives next to houses that are being attacked. The city is called Shosta. So her mom, her tanks being destroyed near her house. His aunt lives in Mariupol. Mariupol is where the battle is happening. So their houses and the houses nearby are being bombed. He's not in the mood to think about relationships with Russia or businesses or Russians. All he wants is for his family to be safe.
So I'm sorry to have asked. Over here, there's a sense of impotence. We want to help, but we have no idea what we can do. I'm not sure even from a business perspective or a humanitarian perspective or a lobbying our government's perspective, but gentlemen, what can people in the SEO community, the search community over who aren't in Ukraine, who are there in Europe, in the UK, in North America, how is there any way we can reach out and help?
I don't think it's possible right now. Yeah, and even the previous question when you ask how it's gonna be, we don't know. We don't know what's gonna happen tonight. Honestly, this is a worst case scenario. I don't know what will happen in a couple of hours. I don't know what will happen in 24 hours. And you're asking the question, what we're gonna think in the future. In terms of SEO community, as I said, I have absolutely massive amount of friends in SEO community in the West, mostly in the United States, in the United Kingdom. And probably I've been asked today, I don't know how many times, what can we do? Some people offer money, some people offer flat and everything. I just put heart. And that's it. Say thank you very much for asking. Nothing you can do. Not today, not tomorrow. Maybe in a month's time something will be stabilized. Yeah. And we could go forward and you can maybe help us or something or something like that. But nothing today. SEO doesn't work against tanks, full stop.
But could you tell guys about our help?
So what you could do is Ukraine has a few charities you could donate money to. The money goes directly into to our soldiers, and also there's a whole like a budget, so we get the budget. They have an open and transparent spending where the money goes to. So 2 days ago in one day we collected $700,000. So if any of you want to help, even if you just send $1, you already did your part. I will send the link below. It's savelife.in.ua. You go to that website, you choose the English language, you press on donate, and you can just send any amount you like. That would be the only thing I guess you could do.
And that's, I'd appreciate if you could drop in the link, and we'll repeat later in the show the URL as well, because that's great advice or a great tip. Something just because I don't often have the opportunity to chat with the people that I am right now, so I have to ask. I as a Canadian have been frustrated by my government and other governments' response. Like, I sort of view economic sanctions as that's all well and good, but Putin will play that out, right? Like he'll just play that out, and governments will change and people will forget, and then the sanctions will be lifted. Like, that's sort of how I view that. Is that the right take? And are you in the Ukraine as like sort of frustrated with the outside world going, this is actually like a real aggression from a real superpower, and you're just letting it happen?
What is a question? It is real. I
think what Dave is asking is, are you frustrated with us that we couldn't do anything about it?
Obviously we are. Yeah, and obviously West, that's what we call Collective West, not Canada personally, Collective West, which is mostly big and powerful country like United States, of course, United Kingdom and Germany and France, could do much more. And for example, they were saying many, many times that sanctions are prepared. And today, well, what happened today? Invasion is here, and only UK came with a sanction, particular, very clear sanctions. So I don't know, but yeah, United States always, we will talk to partners and everything, and we can clearly see there is some countries more against it, some countries less, I guess. So obviously, Germans say they prefer to look at the business relationship and everything. And it's not only superpower, but Western Europe cannot do without Russian gas and oil right now. Just cannot do. They cannot stop buying it today. So they're financing the war.
Okay. That's actually a very interesting point, as we've sort of put ourselves in the spot. The collective West, not just like me in Canada, but like, because we've got plenty of oil, but the collective West, the reliance on them. And then, of course, there's other countries as well, China, whatnot. They're also buying, oil from there and probably wouldn't stop, for
something like this. But also think about it. We're at war for 8 years. Nobody has helped us in 8 years. So why stop now? I mean, we can handle. We can do this. The Ukrainian army has killed about 3,000 Russian soldiers today. We can defend ourselves.
Yeah.
We hope that you can. And it's frustrating as hell to be sitting over here not
May I say something? I disagree that West, Collective West, didn't help us. And I also partially blame to Ukrainian government because they didn't fight corruption and all the bloody things which we do have here. So people in power in Ukraine, they had all this time and they didn't do enough. So always the West look at it and was very reluctant to help. So I do understand this part as well. And this is actually, we only can blame our government, consecutive governments. Agree.
There is speculation in the West that after the Orange Revolution, after the very corrupt government was overthrown and he fled to Russia and a new less corrupt government was put in, that Russia's trying to install a puppet state. Is that what you guys think is happening? Is that do you think that's Putin's end goal?
Валта, що вам спросив?
Он спросил, что вы думаете случится, если Россия придет в Киев, то они хотят ли они заменить правительство на какое-то коррупционированное пророссийское правительство?
I think Putin was very clear. So he the goal for this particular invasion, or they call it military operation, mentioned two goals. First, demilitarization of Ukraine, and second, he called it denazification from Nazi, yeah, like a German Nazi, yeah. Because Putin personally, and probably his government, thinks that we have Nazis running this country, which is not true from my point of view. But obviously, if they get to power here, Russians, they obviously will change the government.
Я думаю, что основная цель Путина – это все-таки президент и правительство. Я думаю, что они делают все возможное, чтобы дойти к рядовому кварталу, где сидит правительство, и по сути, захватить власть. Что будет дальше, непонятно. Скорее всего, захотят поставить свое правительство.
So Igor, doesn't he think that the Russia's target will probably be to replace the to get to the Ukrainian government building and replace the people in charge with the people that will work for them? And then, you know, we can't really look into the future, but that's a possible scenario, I guess.
Okay, guys, as you can probably guess, we're tech interviewers. We don't often do interviews like this, certainly not with people who are in immediate peril. And it's a weird reality and a strange set of questions to be asking. I don't want to keep you longer. I know that you guys all have things you need to do like right now. Is there anything, any messages you want to get out or anything you want to tell people? And before you do, one last thing, when it is time to help on behalf of everybody out here, the moment it's time to help, you say so, and we want to be there. But in the meantime, is there anything you guys want to say to the outside world?
Влад, ты можешь сказать, ты хочешь, чтобы мы тебе сказали что-то всему миру, и у нас теперь есть возможность, верно?
Okay. Да, он спросил, что бы ты хотел сказать западному миру, какое-то последнее слово, что бы ты хотел от них вообще получить или услышать? Могут ли они как-то помочь?
Для тех, кто верит в Бога, молитесь, пожалуйста, за Украину. У кого, ну, кто имеет такую мысль. У кого на сердце помочь деньгами Украине? Мы сейчас сильно нуждаемся в этом, потому что надо закупать технику, надо закупать кровь, надо много чего делать. Для всех остальных...
Are you looking for the best in WordPress speed, security, and scalability? WP Engine is a digital experience platform for WordPress, powering digital experiences for large brands around the world. With easy-to-use site management tools and powerful do-it-your-way development features, WP Engine gives you the flexibility to build it your way. Improve your SEO and conversion rates with a faster site on WP Engine. Learn more on WPEngine.com.
Будет очень здорово, если вы, ну, как минимум, напишите у себя в Фейсбуке, в Твиттере о том, что вы против войны и поддерживаете Украину.
So Igor says, first of all, for those who are religious, who believe in God, please do pray for Ukraine. For those who want to help in any other way, today, if you ever felt the need to donate, do it today. This is critical. We need all the money, all the ammo, all the blood. We need to buy supplies. We need to help our army. For all other people, please do write a message of support, Twitter, Facebook, whatever you have, Instagram, share a story. Do act upon Russian aggression. Do condemn it. Do not let this just go by. Don't be silent.
I'm going to go a little bit less practical, more philosophical. Every day goes war somewhere and we don't care. Today war come to us, we do care. I hope war will never come to you guys, but do care today. And I'm not talking about only Ukraine, because as I said, war in Ukraine was for 8 years and I only start care today. And I kind of didn't care people in Donbas. Why should I care? What's what I thought. And so now I feel absolutely horrible about that. So war, I'm pretty sure, will never come to Canada, but still think about it.
Gentlemen, we're gonna have to leave it at that. Thank you both so much for spending time, and Vlad the translator, thank you for being here. Igor Shaletsko and Anton Shulky, again, stay safe, and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much
for having us. Yeah.
I've never ever done an interview like that before. It's
we never had a war before.
Indeed. Gentlemen, it's emotionally hard to fathom that colleagues and friends of ours are in immediate peril. If friends, if you're listening live, and I know there's a good chunk of you who are, https://savelife.in.ua/en/donate. Again, savelife.in.ua/en/donate. Go there, make the donation, and do what we can. We're going to take a few seconds to reset ourselves. We don't do commercial breaks on Webcology, but I need a second to get myself back together again. I can't imagine talking about Google and tech stuff and technology right now. So a quick break. We'll say goodbye to Anton and Igor and Vlad and move forward with the show. And gentlemen, again, please stay safe.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Stay safe. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, by the way, I just sent you a message that came up us on Twitter that ABC News reporting now about sanctions by the Biden administration. So.
Yeah, America has leveled what are hopefully crippling sanctions on Russia. The UK took them out of the SWIFT banking system. Canada has canceled all export licenses to Russia.
Oh, all EU members and G7 members will participate in the sanctions as well.
Okay, so
you can throw that in there and saying that's the actions the West is taking right now. But now we just have to see how this whole thing plays out.
Well, and here's something to understand. This is the beginning of this is the first day of actions that we're taking. This, our governments haven't announced everything that they're prepared to do. They're leaving room for escalation, I should hope, at any rate.
It's a reoccupation. This is not like this is new ground. It was an area that became sovereign, and now the mother country wants to take it back.
Well, maybe yeah, maybe no, but it's sovereign. And as far as these people are concerned, they're sovereign peoples. There's a whole generation who've grown up only knowing that they're Ukrainian, not knowing that the Ukraine was part of a failed state called the Soviet Union that had to break up.
All right. And we're back. And now we get to, now we'll be chatting about, you know what, I can't help but just say, some slightly more light things, as significant as they may be to the industry that we work in specifically, because regardless of what is happening in the world around us, our industry just keeps plodding forward. And so there are some things for our listeners who are tuning in to go, what I want to hear about is what's going on in the SEO world, in the PPC world. We should maybe offer them a little something too. So I'm going to start with one from the PPC world. And you know what? It's because we've gone probably about 35 minutes into the show, rightfully, but we need to get it in there. We haven't mentioned Barry Schwartz yet, so I need to get that out of the way.
Okay, there we go.
So we've got a story from just a couple days ago over on Search Engine Roundtable. And it's one that I hadn't actually noticed before, like a sort of hiccup. It's not a hiccup because it's intentional, but inside of Google Shopping that I actually have a pretty big problem with. And I'd never noticed it, but once you notice it, you can't help but think of why it's horrible. And the Google Shopping search, so going through the merchant center, getting your shopping results in there. We're not talking about organic. We're talking about the paid side of it. So like 97% of the traffic does not allow for excluding keywords. And I had never noticed that before. And the example that he put in there with a big, like, I don't know why you would want these, but here you go, is yes, if you hello. Had wanting pants with no pockets, for example. You can't have shopping ads with like negative pockets if all you sell is pants with no pockets. And Barry had rightfully said, I am not sure why you would ever want pants with no pockets, but here you go. But you can't use those negatives in the campaigns and in the queries. And I found that very, very problematic, right? Like if you have shopping campaigns, especially where the query types that you might be attracting actually would necessitate negatives, you know, it could be a pretty big oversight. So I did find that interesting that Barry was mentioning it, which just sort of draws my eye more to, oh, right, need to really like look at the queries. At the end of the day, I've said it 100 times on this show, I'm sure. Heck, we had Nava on, chatted about it with her. At the end of the day, it's all about CPAs. And do they produce CPAs? Shopping ads are great for that. But at least on the campaigns that I've worked on, but it is a pretty big problem. I think I like when users can control or when some business owners can control as much as they can. So just a little oddity that, that Barry brought to light there that I was appreciative of.
Indeed.
And you know what, on the same day, different publication, now we're on search engine land, still Barry Schwartz.
He's everywhere.
He's just everywhere. So also from 2 days ago, we've talked about it on the show before, but here it is. The page experience update for desktop started rolling out 2 days ago. So this is going to be interesting to watch as it goes out. It's anticipated to be done by the end of March.
Hello, Patrick.
So we'll see how that goes.
I got to tell you straight up, man. After spending 2 years tightening every bolt, battening every hatch, making sure this website is the fastest website on mobile, if I don't see a good desktop page experience, I am literally smashing my head on my desk. Literally, bang.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, and it is funny because a lot of us, like, despite what they say about mobile, I'm as guilty as anybody else. My first tests are always desktop. I understand that that's the wrong way, and I do always do my mobile tests as well. But my default, and I think it's because traditionally I've been B2B and worked with companies that do most of their transactions on
B2B
desktop.
Is desktop almost exclusively.
Exactly. So my default is always desktop, but that doesn't change how things are indexed, right? Like, as we all know, like just because my user, it's like I view, you know, if all you are is a restaurant with a menu on your website, you don't really need HTTPS, right? Like, you're not taking any data that actually matters here. But here we are, right? And it's the same as this. You may, 3% of your traffic may come in from desktop, and all of them bounce because you don't have the service they care about when they're on mobile. But that doesn't change the fact that indexing worked out that way. Anyway, so just for folks to know, this is happening. What I'm going to be really interested in is there's a bunch of tools, and you know, I use SEMrush as one of them, where I'll track my rankings on both mobile and desktop. I'm going to be interested to see if there's, you know, if this widens the gap between the two and allows for that, or does it shrink the gap? Does it move like people who are doing great on both, what happens, or people who like, you know, might have been being rated on their mobile and now get some benefits from their desktop? Like how does this all play out? Or do they put more stringent requirements on desktops, going, people have at, you know, sort of access to speed, so they can have this experience, or I guess not stringent, but like, you know, different, you know, sort of speed requirements. Do they tighten on mobile now that, you know, they're counting desktop as separate, or what happens? I'm going to be really interested.
Core
to
Web
see that.
Vitals are pretty much the same, desktop and mobile, like yeah. the same numbers. So I don't know if there'll be a difference, but I work with an agency that primarily does B2B. Mm-hmm. And the dev team hates me for this. They just, they see me coming a mile away. They're just like, oh, there's Hector again. Oh my God, he's going to say mobile. We're going to hate him. They did that. I know this ahead of time. And the vast majority of clients for this agency, like they're all B2B. And I go through the stats and I share the stats, and I blush every time I share them, because it's always like 80% desktop, 20% mobile. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the head dev just, you know, looks at me in meetings and goes, why doesn't Google just look at this stat and decide which to apply to the website. You know, should it be measured in the desktop environment? Should it be measured in the mobile environment? I have one of our clients, over 86% of their traffic comes from mobile, but they're a B2C play, the only B2C play, and that's all mobile traffic.
Right.
Google should be able to ascertain where the majority bulk of traffic comes from and figure out this is why they're making these decisions.
Well, and maybe that's what they're doing here, right? Maybe they're just going, oh, okay, we're going to have like our generic search results, and then we're going to, I'm simplifying here, but they're like, put them through this filter and go like, okay, speed matters X percent, right? Or an X factor, you know, and we're just going to pump it through desktop for this and mobile for this, and just sort of let the searcher decide. If they're on desktop, they get filter A. Well, I guess filter A, they get the multiple or multiplier of A. I'm calling it a multiplier, wouldn't necessarily need to be, but, you know, and if they're coming in on mobile, they get Y, and, you know, sort of treating it that way and going, okay, we're actually just going to let the device that the query is being performed on decide which of these two get used. And then the rankings will get adjusted based on that.
Make it simple, like really. And also, do us SEOs a favor. We've been pushing your line forever, Google, and it gets embarrassing sometimes. So, like, you know, throw us a bone, would you? Okay, here's the big one. The acquisition of OnCrawl by Bright Edge.
Yeah.
That's kind of seismic, eh?
Yeah, I did not see that coming. And you know what? Just to mention his name, Danny Goodwin reported that. We had him on just, I guess it was about a month ago, talking about moving over to search engine land. Well, now we're reporting from Danny Goodwin at Search Engine Land.
Did he break did he break the story?
Yeah, well, that's at least he was the one that covered it there, and that was the first place I saw it. So, you know, I'm guessing he did.
Good on him.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that, though? I mean, like, Bright Edge was respected, but I think with OnCrawl, and especially OnCrawl's subscriber base, eh?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's... To me, I sort of view it as a very beneficial acquisition. And I mean that for the SEO community as a whole, like certainly beneficial to both of those companies, but beneficial to the SEO community as a whole. Normally, I like to see variety, right? Like the more individual companies, the better. But when you have one company, Semrush, dominating and a great company, they produce, you know, I've mentioned them a few times, like I subscribe to them, right? Like they produce a good tool set. But when you have one company that's kind of dominating everything, I'm liking to see some of the other companies merging and one acquiring the other, if for no other reason than to give them the resources to sort of keep competing at the same level, right? And to keep pushing forward, because the stronger they are, the stronger Semrush is going to have to get, and vice versa, right? When you end up with two players like that.
Indeed. I would actually suggest it was Semrush's bulk up from, I guess, starting about 2 years ago that has been the catalyst for a lot of other consolidation amongst the other tool and die makers. I call them tool and die makers, but, you know, across the other tool makers.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is like I, at the end of the day, like when I saw this, like I couldn't help but be. Now it's funny because I am more familiar with OnCrawl than Bright Edge. Like I've used OnCrawl. I haven't. I mean, I've tootled around a little bit on trials with Bright Edge, but that's about it. And that was like a while ago. I'm going to be really, really interested to see what happens. And I think that's always in my mind. Sort of the more interesting story that we'll be reporting on months from now will be, okay, X acquired Y. What happened? Like, when you merge these two technologies, are they just the sum of their parts, or do they become more than the sum of their parts? My hope, of course, is that they become more than the sum of their parts, and that, okay, once they can start taking their data points together and start mixing them in and take all of the great brains that work at both of them and get them working together, do they end up producing something that is significantly more than what they each could have brought to the table if you just, as of like yesterday, subscribed to both of them at the same time? Do they merge to produce something better? And of course, what happens to the price point? Can I get both now for equal or less than I could? And if equal, what more am I getting for that? Because I didn't just subscribe to both, perhaps. So you're going to have to give me something more. So there's still a bunch of questions on the table, but I'm loving what I'm sort of seeing. Great for them and for hopefully for all of the people working there. I don't know how that's all playing out yet, but hopefully it works out well for all of the staff and management over there.
Yeah, we normally like also reporting financial details of these the details of these deals, but financial details have not been released, so we don't know. These are both private companies, so they don't got to say anything. But I imagine it was in the mid sevens, maybe eight figures. It's an expensive acquisition.
Yeah.
Got a couple of minutes left. Google Pirate Update. This is a neat one. Google's updated one of its algorithms called the Pirate Update. And the interesting thing about this story is in patenting the methods of the update, Google had to tell the U.S. Copyright Office when a site is caught or demoted by this update, the Pirate Update, the traffic Google search sends to it drops by average 89%. So if you've got something that is even running close to a DMCA takedown, you might want to work on not violating somebody else's copyright and keep your traffic. That's amazing.
Yeah, well, something I would be very interested in knowing, and of course they don't have to get this, at least to the best of my knowledge, is of that remaining 11%, what is that? Like, I would love to know that. Is that just brand with like the movie title? Like, basically, this is the only possible thing you could be looking for. Like, is that all they're left with? Or are they still left with some more generalized, generic traffic? And that would be interesting to know. Like, do they have anything that would have driven something new to them? Or is that just gone and they're that punished and the only thing remaining would be like, you know, not that they fall under this category, but going back to previous penalties like BMW not ranking for BMW, right? Like, is it that sort of?
I'm guessing it's power users who know to start their search on like page 400.
Right. And with a site colon.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a good question though. What would they rank for if pirate algorithm is trying to knock them completely out of the SERPs? But I want to know though, so where were these guys like, where was this algorithm 15 years ago when my articles were being pirated left, right, and center and being, and that was the most frustrating thing, was to wake up and see somebody making bank off of something that I'd written for Ross or for you or for somebody else. Yeah. Or for myself. That just drove me crazy.
Yeah. I think it drove all of us crazy. Like, all of us were just like, because we all had, like, that happened to, I don't think there's a publisher on the planet that didn't get hit with that and go, are you kidding me? Like, and then you'd look at like the backlinks of the site that is ranking and go, I just don't even know what's going on. Like, I don't even know how you're ranking, right? Like, you shouldn't be. And it might just be that you rank for like a day because you're new, but you've stolen a lot of traffic from me in that day. You know, so I guess that's their strategy.
You just wanted to go all smash on those guys.
Yeah.
Okay, we got about 5 minutes left. The only other story that we have on our docket is amazingly complicated. 4DNet, learning multimodal alignment for 3D and image inputs in time. Now, I know our listening audience completely understood that because they're very smart. But Dave, perhaps you'd be good enough to explain it to, I don't know, idiots like me.
Yeah, this to me was super exciting when I read it. Now, I should note, I haven't read the full paper. I've just read the post on it that Google put out just yesterday. But what is very, very fascinating about the work that they're doing right now isn't even just what it is. And basically, Cliff Notes is, in an autonomous vehicle, they have two different sensor types. One of them uses light. It's really good at basically close range stuff, almost exact. And then it uses some other sensors that are like for further away, doesn't give us an exact picture, right? Like, Cliff Notes. That's basically what they're dealing with. They both have different input types, but they both have different output types. So now what they've done here with 4DNet is created a model that will help them bridge the gap. And not just in this application, that would just basically take any two input sensors and then start to figure out in a self-supervised learning fashion how these pieces fit together. Like basically, let's send our training bots through or training systems through, however, like whatever the application they're working on at the time would be, and go, okay, how do the pieces from this sensor and this sensor, how do they work together? It's the first time I've ever seen that where somebody's building models, and obviously they're pretty excited about it over at Google, so it's probably the first time it's happened, where they're building a model just to merge two completely different input types and go find the connections to paint a proper picture of, in this case, the autonomous vehicles, to paint a proper picture of the world, with the understanding that some of the sensors are only going to create a picture of this is what's going on right now, whereas others are built, like the models are built to go, we want to see what things are moving to predict where they will be, but they're both taking different pictures and going, okay, let's merge them. What's really, really exciting though to me isn't just what this is. Like, you know, I do look forward to autonomous vehicles being a thing. That'll be fantastic. Take some road trips, hop in my car at 11 o'clock at night, hop in the bed in the back because I don't bother needing a seat, and then just show up wherever I want to go. Like, I think that's going to be great. you know, for, I mean, not if you run roadside hotels, but great for Dave. But looking forward at all of the variety of different applications that we can think of, this is a sort of technology that will remain an unsung hero because it isn't big and shiny, but that will be bridging the gap between so many things, between audio and video, right? And sort of like finding the connections between things when we're painting a proper picture in the video game space. In there'd be lots of sort of accessibility features that I could see building on this and making it possible for prosthetic arms to operate better in 3D space. You know, taking in the humans, you know, input and understanding sure. it from that perspective. So to me, it's just really example. Exciting.
Do you know why we need to destroy souls and bodies in Amazon fulfillment centers?
Why is that, Jim?
Because robots can't figure out distance, time, and irregular shapes and put it all together at the same time.
Right.
They can figure out irregular shapes, but not if distance and time are included. They can figure out time, but not, you know what I mean? Like they can figure out, but you put it all together and have them make an assessment very quickly. The human brain does it in nanoseconds, and the machine has yet, but this may be a practical work through.
It may be. And another interesting, yesterday, Facebook or Meta AI had just done a session, and they're working on some great things using light as sensors. So, but we'll have to get into that maybe next week.
Indeed.
Because I know we're rounding out the hour here.
We are rounding out the hour. Hopefully, next week, we will be coming to you in a calmer world. In the meantime, it's been a really emotional show. It's been a difficult show. Want to remind you guys of that URL, https://savelife.in.ua/en/donate. Give money to free Ukraine. And friends, write your congresspeople, write your members of parliament. Stand up and speak up against aggression. We have a global order built on peace and stability, and that peace and stability brings prosperity to all of us and gives us the ability to do really, truly, honestly magical things with our talents. But we don't have that if we're fighting each other. Mm-hmm. It's we're a generation that's grown up entirely in peace, almost, you know.
Yeah.
And we've created the internet as we know it today. We can do amazing things, but we need peace. Friends, yeah. It's Jim Hedger from Digilobbies Media and Dave Davies from, oh my God, I'm sorry.
Weights, man. And Biases?
Weights and Biases, thank you. I keep wanting to say Weights and Measure. Weights and Biases. You've been listening to Webcology, recorded live to webcast on the 24th of February, 2022. Gun Full Circle, stay safe, rank well, be kind to each other, and God, and good Lord, let us have peace. We'll talk to you next week.
The opinions expressed in this WMR.FM program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMR.FM. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.